This is the text of an artist talk I gave at the Physics Room Gallery in Christchurch on the 25th of May 2013. It was part of a month-long project entitled The Loudspeaker as Shaman. In this presentation, I'll begin with some short paragraphs giving brief details of my working background, general description of the works, the loudspeaker instrument, and other central concerns. As soon as possible, however, I'll focus upon the title of this project, namely, The Loudspeaker as Shaman. With the intention of keeping you awake, I shall every now and again play excerpts from the works. The narrative aspect of many of them makes excerpts meaningless, but they'll give some idea of my subject matter and sound world. Many are stereo bounces from multi-channel masters, and as a result of this, suffer from a variety of defects, for which I apologise in advance. Since the 1970s, I've made electroacoustic music, sculptural performance and sonic art that's both formally compositional but also experimental in nature.
When I sleep, sometimes I feel what I...
But so many things happen.
I feel what I feel when I was young. Like 1 month of age, I feel more all the time.
Sunset, I always care to you and watching you. I hope you sleep well. And you are my precious. You must be very.
My works often feature an identifiable narrative, and many of the sound gestures evince a vocal quality. Recordings of real places and events are juxtaposed with an abstracted sonic world that utilizes the potential of digital technologies to craft and sculpt sound. Although many of the works feature images as well as sound, the sonic component is given prominence as a device for meditative storytelling. Incorporating political and personal elements, the works explore intimate human relationships, the construction of memories, and the invocation of broader cultural experiences.
You can't go blandly. You've got to work it out and know what you're in for, and you're coming back.
Changing and the way leaves
This practice has resulted in the gradual evolution of a loudspeaker instrument, or acousmonium, housed in a space adjacent to my house in Christchurch. In Studio 174, I've constructed a multi-channel surround sound environment that ensures the angles, elevation, and distance of speakers are all in an ideal position so that the integrity of the acoustic experience is maintained. A central concern for me is that the listening conditions experienced by someone else replicate as closely as possible those influencing me as I make my compositional decisions. This is achieved by placing the someone else in the acoustic volume where the work was made, and their head exactly where mine was when I made the work, a requirement that means only one person at a time can listen. At the centre of this genre is the loudspeaker. In today's technologically replete world, this device is taken for granted, along with its complement, the microphone. For me, however, the loudspeaker functions as a magic portal, facilitating a visceral, emotionally and psychologically powerful aesthetic experience.
Same with the whetstoning. There was a movement that you made with your hands and forearms that actually transmitted itself right up through your shoulders, a sort of a figure of eight movement, used to leave this track in the very light oil that he'd use on the stone that used to absolutely fascinate me. Round and 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 round. It was always sort of the same but never the same kind of thing. And I used to become, you know, mesmerized by this. And I'd get really, really close. And he didn't seem to mind, I think because he didn't even realize I was there. Or he knew I was there, but he was focusing and concentrating so much.
In this regard, the example of the shaman seems to be an appropriate comparator. Shaman, a person regarded as having access to and influence in the world of good and evil spirits, especially amongst some peoples of Northern Asia and North America. Typically, such people enter a trance state during a ritual and practice divination and healing. Divination. The practice of seeking knowledge of the future or the unknown by supernatural means. Healing. Cause a wound, injury, or person to become sound and healthy again. Alleviate distress. Correct or put right. Many shaman use tools to facilitate their rituals, sometimes a drum accompanied by some sort of vocal incantation, as well as objects of other kinds. The acousmatic nature of the loudspeaker, a Pythagorean screen, seems perfectly suited to shamanistic action, as it's capable of bringing to the ears of the listener sound objects which seem to be authentic, but which have no identifiable visible source. The sound field provided by a stereophonic pair generates an holographic sonic image. A larger loudspeaker array will of course be even more eloquent. The notoriously ambiguous qualities of sound, which can be infuriatingly oblique, can become a powerful tool for embodying the intangible otherness of the spirit. Sound waves are invisible, but they are capable of penetrating seemingly impervious materials. They engender deep associative emotions in a listener and may well provoke extreme physical and/or psychological responses. The shaman is both of the body and of the spirit. In these works, of the body is represented by the human voice, or sounds that carry inferences of vocalization, including the breath, a necessary initiator of the voice. Of the spirit is represented by the sounds of nature, of any elemental source other than the sentient, any disembodied sound. Rather than the loudspeaker as a shamanistic tool, it seems to function for me more as the shaman himself, a sort of self-reflective resonator that might make extant otherwise inexpressible intimations. The paradoxical confrontation between the cultural of humankind and the natural of some other kind seems to have been a foundation stone in my working processes. This paradox puts forward many questions concerning various aspects of the human condition. I've always approached this paradox from within my own personal, intimate experience. I've become convinced that the more authentically personal I remain, the greater the chance that some other listener will connect with the feeling world of the work. Without this subliminal, unthinking connection, nothing further, no broader overreaching understanding can occur. I'll just raise the level a bit. I think this features Doreen. Has he ever said anything about the early days? You know, when he was a kid? Yep. He was telling me about those times. She was quite a dame. Who was? His mother. Apparently, she used to play the piano in a dance band during the war.
Say that again.
Didn't she used to play all of the old popular songs?
Say that once more.
Didn't she play all of the popular songs in the band and for the family sing-alongs?
One more time.
Be sure it's true when you say I love you.
Be sure it's true when you say I love you.
It's a sin to tell.
It's a sin to tell a lie.
Many's the heart that's been broken.
Many's the heart that's been broken.
Just because
those words were spoken.
I love you.
I love you. Yes, I do.
I love you.
I love you.
If you break my heart,
I'll die.
So be sure it's true.
When you say I love you.
It's a sin to tell a lie.
To this extent, the role of memory has been prime from a very early stage. It's an appropriate subject for a genre, sonic art, that relies upon the recording to provide its basic materials. A recording is ipso facto a thing of the past. Something has to have already existed in order for it to be recorded. Of course, when the recording is played back, it's perceived in the now as a real-time experience. This characteristic, material of the past being experienced in the present, gives any recording, old or new, a nostalgic essence not only impossible to escape, but ripe for exploitation. Vladimir Nabokov expresses it admirably. It's no accident that he uses musical terminology to carry his ideas. Vladimir Nabokov, 1899 to 1977. From Speak Memory, an autobiography revisited, 1966. Quote, "I witness with pleasure the supreme achievement of memory, which is the masterly use it makes of innate harmonies when gathering to its fold the suspended tonalities of the past. I like to imagine in consummation and resolution of those jangling chords something as enduring in retrospect as..." And then he goes on to describe various scenarios from his childhood and continues, quote, "And then suddenly, just when the colours and outlines settle at last to their various duties, smiling, frivolous duties, some knob is touched, and a torrent of sounds comes to life. Voices speaking altogether, a walnut cracked, the click of a nutcracker carelessly passed, 30 human hearts drowning mine with their regular beats, the sough and sigh of 1,000 trees, the local concord of loud summer birds, and beyond the river, behind the rhythmic trees, the confused and enthusiastic hullabaloo of bathing young villages like a background of wild applause." Unquote. And from the programme notes to my own work, Speak Memory, quote, "Nostalgia, is it a disease, a drug, or a talent?" Reading Orlando Figg's Natasha's Dance, interesting thoughts about the role of nostalgia in the works of exiled Russian artists, in particular Nabokov. Quote, this is from Fiji's book, "The nostalgia for Vira, Nabokov's childhood home, was the inspiration for Speak Memory, in which he lovingly describes its every little bush, in an effort to recover his childhood memories and desires. It was a sort of Proustian discourse on the sinuosity of time and consciousness. Nabokov's memory was a creative act, a reanimation of the past which blended with the present through association and was then transfigured into personality and art." Tonight, I was just sort of idly gazing out of the window when I noticed the star in the sky. Just one star. And I realised that Pop, as a young man, had probably contemplated the same star. And it occurred to me, why hadn't I thought about that when I'd looked at stars before, in New Zealand?
Did you ever visit the quarter with
your...
You must have.
Oh, Dad, yes, when I was young, before I married.
Yes.
All the girls, the different gangs of girls, they were all made welcome.
Right.
They talk about the bad boys now, but the bad boys was as bad boys then. If they ever knew that any girls was coming, they would have been there and they would have been playing tricks.
Right.
We used to go on the bicycles. When we went to go home, the bike would be hot with a tree. And then, of course, you had to walk home when they could come.